support the combined meeting of the Landmarks Commission and the Design Commission. We are ready to enter our second briefing of the day. This one is for the South Park blocks. And as we did in the previous, what I think we'll do is first have staff briefly introduce the project, then have the, I mean, it's not really the applicant, but the agency or group bringing the briefing forward to give us a little information. We can take some questions then, but then we'll open it up to testimony. And just as a heads up, I believe there are a fair number of testifiers today. And then after that, we will go into some further commissioner discussion and focused questions. So with that, I believe staff is Art Graves on this, and go ahead and start us out, Art.
I'm actually going to interject for Art for a second. This is Hillary. He is having technical difficulties, so I don't know if he can present, but if he can't, I have his PowerPoint and I'll present for him. If he can speak, he'll speak. If he can't, I will. But I wanted to remind everybody that is here that the system is down, and people who might be trying to log in from the agenda cannot get in. This is recorded, no decisions are made. The Design Commission and Landmarks Commission are advisory on this briefing, so no decisions are made. And I wanted to acknowledge that Design Commissioner Shanta Robinson has arrived. Art, can you speak?
I can speak, but I can't see. It's kind of a weird situation. So I think what I can do, hopefully everybody can hear me, is I'm looking at really a PowerPoint that I have created for this that Hillary also has. And so I'll kind of walk through that and just kind of touch on that briefly, and then kind of let the applicant take over. So again, this is South Park Blocks Master Plan, excuse me, and it's roughly 12 blocks, and they are all zoned OSD, so open space with a design overlay. They're in the Central City Plan District, and they are in the Downtown and University District sub-districts. And maybe just to jump right to the questions and comments to just kind of provide both commissioners the comment regarding what are the tangible and intangible elements of the park block's existing character, and are worthy of retention or preservation, and is the proposed level of impact to existing elements appropriate? Is the proposed configuration of the green loop appropriate for this location? And then what other questions should Parks and Rec consider as they move forward with the master plan?
Any questions for Art?
Okay, I think we can go ahead and let Parks and the, I guess it's by Parks, give us a presentation. Thanks.
Hi, my name is Tate White. I'm a senior planner with Portland Parks and Recreation, and I am managing this project for the Bureau, but I'm going to pass it over to my consultant team that's been guiding us through this process with their expertise, so they can provide the presentation. But I'm here as well as many other staff who have been part of the Technical Advisory Committee representing the Portland Bureau of Transportation, the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, both the Urban Design Group as well as the Historic Program Manager, Brandon Spencer-Hurdle. So we're all here to help answer questions as needed. And with that, I'll pass it on to Lori Matthews and Carol Mayer-Reed.
Hi, everybody. Can everybody hear me? That's yes. Good. So I'm Lori Matthews. I'm the Director of Preservation Planning and Design at MIG, and I'm joined here with my colleague Rachel Edmonds, who's a landscape architect at MIG, and our teammate Carol Mayer Reed, who's principal and landscape architect at Mayer Reed. And we are here to represent a larger team of people from MIG, Mayer Reed, Tool Design, and Morgan Holland Associates to present highlights of the preferred design for the South Park Block. We want to thank you in advance for including us in this joint meeting because given the intersection of issues and opportunities and ideas associated with this park, your combined perspectives are particularly valuable here. So since we last met with you in December, we developed a preferred design after listening to feedback from yourselves, the Urban Forestry Commission, the CAC, the TAC, and the public. And through the spring and the early summer of this year, we're now listening to those same groups for feedback before finalizing the plan. To date, we have given a presentation to the CAC where we received tremendous support. And the city is currently summarizing feedback from a public online survey that recently closed. As a real brief refresh, we developed three concepts. Following a day-long design charrette with the CAC and TAC and full design team. That was quite a day. We had a lot of ideas bandied about. And we also were studying the current conditions of the park, and we funneled all those together to develop these three concepts, our goal being to present multiple ideas so we could be sure to get really broad feedback on the multiple ideas that came forward. The majority of that feedback asked us to sustain the character of the tree's canopy, the grid layout, the arching form, while also improving its resiliency, provide more seating and gathering areas to foster greater use of the park, tell a wider story to represent a more diverse cultural history, improve inclusivity and accessibility, increase native plantings in a garden-esque style, emphasize the pedestrian experience while safely accommodating other modes of travel, and balancing the addition of new features with the park's historic character, ensuring that those new features are compatible yet distinct. What we have today, this is an existing conditions map, reflects several layers of change over the years, over the decades. The linear park really can be divided into two six-block districts. And while there are some elements that really extend the length of the park, such as the bosque of trees and lawn areas and some paved spaces, there are others such as the pathways that really differ between the two districts. In fact, the pathways themselves have been an element that's shifted over the years in terms of form and layout. So one of the first things we did as we were looking at the park itself was to identify the park's character-defining features. And they include the spatial organization of the 12 half-sized city blocks that form that linear park, the grid arrangement of large tree species that form a closed canopy, the sequence of focal points and gathering areas that are located throughout the park, a balance of planting areas and paved kind of hardscaped areas, and the primary north-south oriented circulation. Overall, the draft preferred design responds to that character and the feedback we've received by developing a plan to rehabilitate and perpetuate the grid of trees, which I'll go into more detail in a second, emphasizing the sequence of focal points and gathering areas. Those remain centrally located in the cultural district, which is on the right here. And then we've maintained most of the kind of paved spaces in the university district in their existing locations. We also set to balance planting areas with hardscaped areas. So there's a mixture. We've maintained generally a similar percentage of the coverage of both of lawn to planting areas to plazas and pathways. So we have shifted some locations in some blocks in some instances. We're also emphasizing that north-south circulation flow, sizing it to accommodate our city's larger population while providing some key connections that go kind of east-west through the park. And finally, one of the kind of the last kind of overview points is that to preserve the park space and the central spine of pedestrian use, especially that which occurs in the cultural district, we are recommending that the green loop be directed to the right-of-way associated with Park Avenue West. Pedestrians through the cultural district will use that central promenade through that area with bikes separated from cars along Park Avenue West. And then cars and parking will remain on Park Avenue East. As the green loop transitions south towards the university district, it will be on a shared use path along the west edge of that district, and then transition diagonally through block two, which is almost the, not quite the last block on the map, and to College Street. So that's a general overview. We'll get into some slightly more details in just a second, but the first one we wanted to provide some content about and get kind of information about is the tree succession strategy, since it's such a big part of the park itself. It's really a process. It's a vision for the future form of the urban forest that will be implemented over time to preserve the grid of trees while increasing the urban forest's resilience. The urban forest's current form, which is on top here, and then the long-term vision is on the bottom. This is showing the university district. I'll get to the cultural district in just a second. That the current form is really born from its origins as a monoculture with the trees planted very closely and allowed to grow up together. Unfortunately, monocultures are inherently less resistant to pests, diseases, and climate change. And so that's one of the things we're trying to work through in terms of this succession plan. The proposed form, which is on the bottom, retains that grid while providing more adequate growing space for large tree species to reach their full width and have that closed canopy. In the university district, we've retained the American elm through a central spine. They're indicated there with the yellow dot through the center. And then we've added other large and some medium tree species, including some evergreens, along the edges to kind of increase the diversity of species and hence the resiliency of the urban forest. Next one, no, thanks. In the cultural district, the focus was really on preserving the American elms that frame that central promenade, something that came up quite consistently in people, what they love about the park. But we're giving them the space they need to achieve that kind of iconic arching form. Therefore, the elms that line the central promenade through the cultural district really kind of frame that area, and they are bordered on the east and west sides by smaller, not smaller, but large and medium stature trees along those edges. And one of the things just to note about this is that the grid is still there. You can still see the symmetry and kind of the balance there, but the trees in the middle have that more generous spacing, which will allow them to grow. But the trees on the edges will actually be planted within the same grid that they were planted historically. So even with that strategy of kind of prioritizing elms in the cultural district and having kind of a semblance of them in the university district, we're still not quite meeting Title 11, where one of the goals is to have no more than 24% of when any one single tree species in a park. So of the proposed 254 trees that are part of the succession plan, currently 76 or 30% are elms. There's 57 in the cultural district and 19 in the university district. So in order to meet the 24%, we would have to reduce that to 61 elms. And so that's something that we're still kind of trying to balance through, but just wanted to be clear about that. And in terms of the species of other types of trees, we're in the process of developing a list. Rachel, if you could move to the next slide, that would be great. Thanks. We're in the process of developing a list of species, but we're kind of trying to keep it with these kinds of goals in mind: broadleaf deciduous, broadleaf, some evergreen, deciduous conifers and evergreen conifers, primarily broadleaf deciduous, but of all of the large stature of the kind of that will match the American elms that are primarily there today. And with that, I'll turn that over to Rachel. She can start to go through some of the more details of the design.
Hi, I'm Rachel Edmonds. I'm a landscape architect with MIG, and I'll begin the walkthrough of the block by block. You hear me okay? Okay. So here we have an overview of the six blocks of the university district. Major design moves for the university district include provision of three new and improved gathering spaces of varying sizes in blocks 1, 2, and 4. And the Green Loop operates as a slow use, shared use path, much as it does today, along the west side of the park blocks, with a series of discrete pavement markings at specific locations that help guide bicyclists and pedestrians. Block 1 provides a significant renovation to the existing PSU playground. The design retains mature elms, and the playground and surrounding landscape are joined around a new gathering space. A new connection to the play and gathering area is provided at the Native American Student and Community Center. Here are some look and feel images associated with Block 1. There is social seating, a play feature, of to be determined, kind of the look, this is just kind of look and feel what we've gotten so far, interactive art and understory plantings. The section for Block 1 highlights how a mature elm anchors the new gathering space near the playground. The drawing also depicts new conifer tree plantings provided at the southern end of the park with understory of low native vegetation. Conifers were added at this location to achieve required species diversity, but with a lower impact to the park's overall historic design. Block 2 includes the addition of new flexible plaza space fronting the Viking Pavilion, which has been supported by PSU and the Farmers Market. Once the plaza is constructed, the Green Loop will travel diagonally from the southern corner of Shattuck Hall to the alignment along Park Avenue West. Minimal changes are proposed for Block 3. Pathway paving and the square around the Holon sculpture is upgraded with new hardscape materials, and social trails between the library and Massey Hall are formalized. Carol? Carol, are you muted? Just give her a second to chime in.
Yes, I think I'm on now. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can.
Okay.
Scary.
Sorry about that. A little bit of a dramatic pause there. Can you go to the Block 4 plan? There we go. Okay, so we wanted to talk a little bit about the Smith block. And it's similar, the treatment is similar. It keeps the diagonal circulation pattern. It expands on existing elements. And we also wanted a balance of light and shaded areas. And a couple of trees have been removed to open up the central space for an amphitheater, a flexible use area and performance space. And we wanted to flatten the grade a bit so it makes it more usable and also add a possible covered canopy for summer shade and used by the PSU Farmers Market. There's also perimeter seating in this space. And then some covered seating near the student entry. Could you go to the next slide, please? And then there in the section, you can see where the east-west grade changes are relative to the central space. And then there's also the shared use path on the west side where it's combined due to the generous space available from the street vacation. And there's also a lower volume of pedestrians along those several blocks. Next slide, please. And just some of the design elements, the built-in seating type at the amphitheater. There's the covered use area. You know, maybe some kind of tensile structure could be used. And then you're seeing in the lower example, the kind of seating that was used out in front of Masaya Hall. Next slide, please. And then blocks 5 and 6 have design elements, they're basically similar to what we have there now. Kramer and Lincoln blocks are more low-key. There aren't a lot of big changes here. Emphasis on tree canopy, sort of a balance of lawns and planted areas. And then you'll note that there's additional streetcar platform on Mill Street at mid-block for all-door boarding of the streetcar. And the next slide, please. Blocks 5 and 6 may have examples of understory, native plants, could be some seasonal plants as well. You're also seeing in the upper right the example of the separated bikeway proposed in this area. And then this area could also be used for rotating art exhibits or even permanent art, knowing that we want to emphasize, you know, more student work and more probably emerging artists could be featured here, maybe not part of the final art collection of RAC. So Rachel, are you going to introduce the cultural district?
Oh, let me unmute myself. Okay, so here we have an overview of the 6 blocks of the cultural district. The major design move is the central promenade, and it's envisioned as a generous walkway down the middle of the cultural district with elms or elm-like trees lining it. The area today exists as a planter with lawn ornamental plantings and elm trees of varying health and maturity. The central promenade is constructed over time with a no replacement strategy when a mature tree dies or becomes damaged. In the cultural district, the alignment for bicycles will be along a separated two-way bikeway on Park Avenue West, where bike speeds will be slow given there are street crossings at every block. Pedestrians will use the central promenade along the north-south axis. The last phase of the master plan revealed a preference for this configuration, since a bikeway on Park Avenue East is incompatible with the operations of Portland 5 and Portland Park and Rec operations. The next 2 slides provide some information about how the Green Loop operates for cyclists in the cultural. So again, pedestrians will use the central promenade within the park blocks, and bicyclists use a separated bikeway along Park Avenue West. This alignment does remove parking along the museum frontage. A planted median between the bikeway and a vehicle through lane and a planted buffer between the park articulate the Green Loop footprint. The bikeway and planters are constructed on PVOT right of way. Here are some material ideas for how the bikeway may be demarcated in the cultural district. The design does not include painted lanes in keeping with the character of the district. Bollards are present only on blocks 10 and 11. Block 7 is a neighborhood block in the cultural district. At Market Street, corner crossings are improved to address pedestrian visibility at the streetcar station. At this location only, pedestrians use diagonal walkways to join the central promenade from the sidewalk. Changes to this block are minimal beyond the central promenade and addition of seating types added on either end of the shadow of the elm paving. Block 8 is also a neighborhood block. Approaching from the south, a pedestrian crosses Clay Street mid-block at a raised median to provide safety and refuge for pedestrians. This treatment was important given the high vehicle speeds on Clay as cars approach the Highway 26 on-ramp. Compatible design shared tables and social seating is arranged along the central promenade with generous side berths that are provided for pedestrians traveling through. 3 locations for interactive art or all ages play features are provided for interest on this block. And so here are some material and furnishing ideas for block 8, the planted median and buffer along the Green Loop bikeway, interactive or sculptural art, and shared seating. Block 9 has a very light touch beyond transition to the central promenade. The new wider walkway provides a more appropriate scale of space to reflect on the Peace Chant sculpture. Other improvements include new mid-block planters with native and adapted plants on the east and west sides of the block. Carol?
Hey, thank you. We're sort of looking at these next two blocks, 10 and 11, sort of a crescendo or perhaps a focal point within the park blocks. And we felt that taking advantage of the institutions surrounding these particular blocks was a real opportunity to create placemaking and maybe making these more of a focal point in the park blocks. Physically joining two blocks in front of the Art Museum, the Mark Building, and the Oregon Historical Society by closing a portion of Madison Street. And this happily aligns with and is connected to the new Rothko Pavilion entry. So we wanted to maximize some flexible, programmable, hardscape, open space, places for performances, displays, works of art, seasonal use by markets or festivals. And in keeping with this idea of the widened central promenade, there's a lot of circulation down the middle of this block, giving up the sidewalk on the west side, but also being able to eliminate parking and repurpose Park Avenue West for a widened drop-off with passage of cars through there down to a single lane. But there's actually room for about four buses or 8 cars to drop off right in front of the Art Museum. There'd also be connections to the doorways of the Mark Building and the Portland Art Museum. So there's several, you know, breaks in the bikeway, but there's a lot of circulation going on in these particular blocks. I'll talk about a few more of the features. Here's some precedents for some flexible seating, knowing that new seating elements may want to have contrast with traditional, but they're examples of more interactive social seating in the area that flanks the Madison Plaza. And then there could be a lighting. Maybe there's a new feature lighting, or it's sculptural, or it's up in the air. It really starts to create this space as a placemaking feature for these two blocks. And maybe there's a suspended sculptural element. We're showing in the lower right hand a punched metal screen that has interpretive features into it. And as the sunlight comes down through it, it casts these patterns or information, artwork, onto the ground plane. It's sort of then on the left-hand side, interactive art features or opportunities for storytelling. So there's all kinds of things that could happen in these two particular blocks. The next slide shows the section at the southern end of the two blocks, the central promenade. You can see, you know, the large canopy trees, smaller medium trees to the west. You can see the separated bikeway that would be lifted up to the park and plaza grade. The north block would be similar to this layout. And then the next section through Madison Street Plaza, you can see the full width of the plaza space and the walkways over to it. You can see the separated bikeway, this time separated with bollards because we want to, you know, get down to a narrow area where we're allowing for through traffic and as well as drop off. And you can see that large placemaking element that might scale more with the trees and become a feature within the park. The next slide is of block 12. Oops, excuse me. Yeah, Szymanski Square. And this is the northern end of the park blocks, or the terminus if you're coming from the south, but it's actually the entry if you're coming from downtown and approaching from the north. So you're seeing very similar elements to what are there now. The fountain, the open space stays open and flexible. There's not really large changes other than adding gateway features. And this is a good slide to understand how the green loop on the west side on Park Avenue West really gathers bikes and pedestrians together, brings them to the corner of Salmon and proceeds northbound to Director Park or beyond. And there tends to be a planning momentum right now elsewhere in the downtown, suggesting that Park Avenue West is going to be the street for the green loop. So just to conclude quickly with the materials palette, I won't go through this. There's a lot of text in this slide, and you can ask questions about it later. But the main thing is to be simple, high quality. We want to provide some elements of continuity that are compatible with the historic district, the sense of timelessness, yet allow new features to be new. We're not trying to present new things as old. We're trying to sort of separate the eras, and so there's an overlay of contemporary elements within the more timeless historic. The next slide is about the university district in particular. We were looking at two paving options here. Feel free later to comment on these, but using the exposed aggregate and the brick, or perhaps using a different exposed aggregate, and then maybe finishing the border with concrete, making it a little bit more contemporary. Plazas would have architectural slabs or precast concrete, or say like the Hanover pressed pavers. And then the next slide shows the cultural district palette. So because it didn't historically have the exposed aggregate, we were just looking at a 6-inch reinforced concrete scoring pattern of cast in place concrete, pretty durable, pretty simple. Some banding could be included in order to get that idea of continuity. And then there would be concrete or stone pavers for the new plaza areas. The next slide is just a quick review of planning, sort of the look and feel that we're looking for. There could be some accents based on sun or shade. The main thing is to keep it low maintenance and also low in size, so the sight lines are maintained. Just generally low shrubs and ground covers. The last slide, I believe, in this set is the possible planting. Looking at the green loop median plant types, you know, that they're very durable, easy to maintain, low, and then in inbound of the park areas, more examples of understory and buffer planting types. So I think with that, we'll send it back to Lori for questions and comments.
Yeah, so there's a plan here that we can refer to, and we can always go back to some other slides as we go. And I know that there were some questions that were posed earlier by Art. We've also developed a few in case you don't have any questions that come to mind. I'm sure you do. So we can open it up for questions. One of the things that we've presented here just to get started is the tree code itself that I mentioned. Some comments on the tree succession strategy and kind of some of those proposals would be great. We're meeting with the Urban Forestry Commission on Thursday.
Okay, thank you very much to the whole team, Lori, Carol, Rachel. It's my understanding that there are quite a few testifiers, over 20 in fact, and so I think I'm going to ask commissioners to hold questions until after the testifiers. I want to make sure we really can hear everyone. Although I will maybe use my power as today's chair to ask if you could just briefly give us an overview of the timing of this project, how you see this go, you know, what the next steps are, and just give us a sense of when this is happening.
Sure. So like I said, we're going through right now getting feedback from a variety of all the groups that we've kind of been engaging throughout the process. We're in the process of drafting some aspects of the master plan, you know, some of the background material, and then we hope to go to City Council in September and finish it up in the fall. So we're getting close to the end. So that's about where we're at. I don't know if you want need more details, but those are some kind of general hitting points that we're shooting for.
Fabulous. And I may ask you to come back to this slide. I mean, I think this is, you know.
Sure. Yeah, you let us know where you want to go.
Yeah. Okay. And this one as well. Great. Great overview. Okay. So my question is to Laura. I know we're having some issues with people phoning in or, you know, connecting. Do we still have, you know, quite a few testifiers, or have we unfortunately lost some due to our problems?
I can't tell that, but since most of our testifiers, they pre-registered, so they had the links, and so they have been able to get in. They are numbered in the attendees list.
Okay. Yeah, very good. Well, then we will launch into public testimony now. And I have the first one, and I guess this just comes in order of you signing up, is Wendy Rom.
Kristen, before Wendy starts speaking, I wanted to note that we are going to be timing testifiers. Hopefully they will hear a ding at the 1 minute mark and a second ding at the 2 minute mark, which is when they should stop testifying so that we can get through everybody so that you guys can eventually go home.
I
guess you are home, but
I was going to and forgot.
Okay.
So I have a question before I start, and that is for people who are not, I'm not sure, I don't think on the list, are you going to ask for additional testimony? Because I know somebody, Henry Kanowski, wanted to testify and somehow or another was not able to register.
We'll go through the list of people registered and then ask if anyone else is out there who would like to speak. Thanks.
Great. Thank you very much.
On that point, real quick, sorry, Wendy. We did receive Henry's letter, and that was forwarded to the commission before this briefing.
Right. Yeah. He also had oral testimony, apparently, that was different.
Okay.
So, should I start?
Go ahead. 2 minutes.
Okay. I'm Wendy Rom, Southwest 10th Avenue, representing the DNA, which requests the master plan be paused until a tree succession plan and the South Park Block historic nomination process is complete. The nomination was submitted by DNA to SHPO on July 1. Of note is that the CC 2035 plan prioritizes tree succession plans, PSU planning, and a historic nomination. It mentions nowhere a master plan. Why is this master plan being done first? Don't interior standards suggest nomination should precede planning for open spaces? An April 2016 document indicates a developer parks agreement that a quarter block of affordable housing would be underway or completed before a master plan began. That lot is up for sale. It also notes that the developer offered to complete the historic designation first, but Parks said per a SHPO agreement, it would do it before 2020. Where is it? The scope of work given to the historic consultant must have been limited since an important DNA find isn't mentioned in Parks' existing conditions report. The 63 discovery was of a pre-contact head of an otter or bear. Remember, the South Park blocks have never been tilled, so could reveal much about that early history. They are archaeologically sensitive. Although the narrative mentions the find, the nomination did not use criteria D due to COVID's impact on research. It builds strong cases for criteria A and C. 150 years later, the original design features outlined in criteria C still exist today. They are open space, flexible, and adaptive for the enjoyment of all. 5 axial rows of deciduous trees, not evergreens, in ordered ranks and alignment. Restrained and refined simplicity, defined boundaries. These elements do not preclude flexible future uses. They create long promenades and stunning long views of a grassy plain under an arching canopy of tall trees. Today's master plan draft doesn't respect any of these characteristics. Pause the master plan now so we can get a plan that is right, which is what we all want. Thank you.
Thank you. Thomas Ray.
Hi, I'm Thomas Ray of Southwest First Avenue, speaking on behalf of the Downtown Neighborhood Association. I recommend the South Park Block Master Plan be paused until the historic nomination of the park blocks is complete. The nomination was submitted to SHPO on July 1st. The draft plan degrades the defining historic characteristics of this unique and seminal park gifted to Portland 150 years ago. The draft erodes the preeminent unity of the original park, a unity composed of a cathedral-like canopy of five ordered rows of deciduous trees above a floor of grass, providing cohesive long views and multiple axial walkways demarcated by defined boundaries. Conceived and realized as a single entity of 12 linear blocks, it's not only what is there, but what is not there. Simplicity is intrinsic to its design, history, heritage, and integrity. Simplicity allows flexible, adaptive, and diverse uses over time. The park has resisted development since inception, and a past PSU president warned against overdeveloping, quote, this haven in the heart of the metropolis, unquote. A unified park is whole only once. If divided, it is very difficult, like Humpty Dumpty, to put the pieces together again. Do not compartmentalize the park or carve out borders for purposes not primary to the park, the pedestrian. Maintain unifying principles that tie together the integrity of all 12 blocks. Five rows of trees, distinct borders, linear views, promenades, grass, not more hardscape. Lighting fixtures of historic design, linear benches on walkways, all provide unity. Avoid clutter like tables and canopies. Do not impede long views. Do not remove the rows of trees and prohibit permanent structures. In closing, I recommend a pause pending nomination of the park blocks for the historic register so the plan can accurately address and respect the integrity of this unique space essential to the livability of downtown. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, I see LaJune. And you're on mute.
Hi, I'm LaJune Thorson, board member of the DNA and member of the Land Use and Transportation Committee. I live at 255 Southwest Harrison Street. I would like to read from the document called Final Findings and Decision for Broadway Tower, Policy 8, Parks and Open Spaces, Case Number LU15-281248, DZM-MS, dated April 21st, 2016. And I quote, the applicant previously proposed listing the park blocks on the National Register of Historic Places. However, Portland Parks and Recreation has an agreement in place with the State Historic Preservation Office to list the park blocks in the National Register of Historic Places by 2020 and elected to pursue this listing on their own. You can, unquote, you can see the Parks Department agreed to work towards the listing of the South Park blocks on the National Register of Historic Places. They have not done that. In the absence of progress from the Parks Department on that commitment, the DNA has done what they did not and submitted a proposal on July 1st, earlier this month. The current draft master plan degrades the contributing and defining historic characteristics of this historic park. This is why we recommend the South Park Block master planning be paused until the historic nomination of the park blocks is completed. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's see, number four, I see Story Sweat.
Thank you. I'm Story Sweat, preservation architect, and I live at 1221 Southwest 10th Avenue. I head the DNA nominating committee. From its origin in 1852 as one of Portland's first public open spaces, the South Park Blocks has been free of programmed uses with a minimal infrastructure and adaptable to the enjoyment of all. Ordered green and open, it has functioned as a welcome release from the surrounding dense and chaotic central city. The South Park Block's contribution as an open space has been significant since by the city's own standards, our Southwest neighborhood remains underserved with park space. The South Park Block endures as a rare and precious recreational opportunity for residents and visitors alike. Free of defined activities, infrastructure, or imposed use limitations, the park has accommodated a range of uses over its 168 years, from an active venue for a pleasant walk to a variety of temporary large-scale events, whether planned or impromptu. The South Park Block's open spaces endure because it has been adaptable, accessible, and inclusive by its design and nature. The park's original orderly treescape of deciduous broadleafs has organized and sheltered the open space with a minimum of interrupting trunks. These trees now support a massive urban forest canopy that, together with the surrounding mid-rise architecture, define the park boundary and unify this largest of green oasis in our central city. Any change to the South Park Blocks of the magnitude proposed by this master plan should be first guided by history, relying on the strength of the principles of its founding, not on the artifice of popular whim, today's urban design trend, or influence of external funding. As one of the city's few and vital open spaces so attractive to compromise, erosion, or claim by interest groups of many stripes, the South Park Block should be afforded special recognition and protections. Any future change to this important public resource should come only through the care and authority of those informed by public input and those with the confidence to merge history with their own design expertise. People such as you, those responsible for our city's design and architectural legacy. It's my opinion that our national registration nomination offers the best assurance for such a future. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Robert Gelbke. You're on mute. Robert, can you hear me? You're on mute. Can you unmute yourself?
Okay. There you go. Start over again. Thank you for the proper pronunciation. Bob Gelbke here. I'm a resident of American Plaza Towers and a member of the DNA and its LUT committee. I recommend that the South Park Block Master Plan be paused until this historic nomination of the park blocks is complete. That nomination was submitted to SHPO on July 1st. The current draft master plan degrades the contributing and defining historic characteristics of this park. I am very concerned that the present suggested design involves removing one of the five rows of deciduous trees and adding evergreens. This would abrogate the intent and purpose of the existing 1870s plan that removed existing evergreens and put in a wonderfully harmonious, peaceful, useful, and quite unique space. Resulting deciduous trees frame, encourage, and facilitate seasonal changes. Colors change, shadows of light change, sight lines change, and are reflected amongst us all as the overall experience envelops us. The monotony of evergreens would greatly detract from this and would actually significantly decrease the availability of useful park service area. Why is that? As an evergreen grows, it increasingly and incrementally expands its diameter wingspan to a wider area. As this footprint expands, all the vegetation below it dies and the area becomes useless. It might seem innocuous at first glance, but the trunk of a 2-foot diameter deciduous tree only uses 3.14 square feet of surface area, while the same sized evergreen with an overhanging wingspan of 15 feet uses up to 175 square feet, more than 50 times more, 50. It's easy to envision that 5% of the park surface area could be lost with wide plantings. Evergreens are also dense and dark in their interiors and don't allow easy airflow or welcoming casual use and admiration. You also don't walk by or under evergreens, you walk near them. Deciduous trunks encourage close-in proximity ground cover and citizenry proximity. Evergreens do not. As we endeavor to serve all our neighbors, openness and functionality become key parameters. Evergreens certainly don't enhance that. We encourage master planning, but the succession tree plan should be pulled out and discussed publicly, separately. It's too important. All must be properly ordered and phased in. All we need is a pause to define the area better and then adjust the suggested parameters to match up with that vision. Thank you.
Thank you. Next on my list, I have Shirley Rackner. Is that the next speaker you have for your group?
I'm here.
Great. Thank you, Shirley.
I'm Shirley Rackner. I'm speaking on behalf of the Downtown Neighborhood Association as a board member. I do want to say I appreciate the park's very professional presentation. Let me present as a citizen, someone who walks the park blocks every day. And I enjoy the grandeur and the serenity under the high canopy of the trees. I do not oppose change. It is part of life, and life marches us into the future. However, as we march into the future, we can't ignore Portland's rich past and cheat the future of a beautiful oasis in downtown. So I ask you to click the pause button on the master plan until the historic nomination is complete. This urban retreat in the middle of downtown is a gift. Based on my view of the master plan, it appears that there will be approximately 30% fewer trees in the South Park blocks. This would be a terrible loss to the city. While experts advise us that trees in urban areas help ward off pollution as well as provide a long list of benefits for people and the planet. The master plan also calls for the replacement of deciduous trees to conifers and evergreen. This choice should be rethought. According to scientific journals, deciduous trees like elms and oaks absorb 50% more carbon than a conifer or an evergreen. According to Portland State Professor Peraski, citing Wild in the City, large elms in the South Park blocks absorb 260 pounds of carbon dioxide and take in 550 gallons of stormwater each year. The deciduous trees are not just beautiful, they serve a vital function. Finally, the master plan calls for the destruction of the center beds in the park block that contain native plants and mature rose bushes, the emblem of our city. And in their place, we will be increasing concrete in various forms in the middle of the park blocks. This ill-considered decision will decrease the greenery in favor of more hardscape, a primary contributor to urban heat island. Also, more concrete risks surface runoff. I submit there is much to think about before passing on the major changes as proposed in the master plan. Please pause this. Portland has much to lose. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, I have Marion DeBartoleben. Forgive me if I said your name wrong.
No, that's correct. That's fine.
Okay.
Thank you. My name is Marion DeBartoleben. I live in the Southwest downtown area and serve on the DNA Land Use and Transportation Committee. The plan mentions equity, but I see little or no equity in this draft. An opportunity for true equity relates to the closing of Madison Street, which the DNA supports. Rather than erect some large permanent structure that would compete with the new Portland Arts Museum Rathcoe Pavilion and would also compromise the historic open space design feature, I suggest instead turning over this new plaza street to the museum and the Oregon Historical Society to curate temporary art features or events representing diverse cultures. Such events would bring greater opportunity for learning about varied ethnic and cultural differences in our city. Minority collaboration for annual outdoor events could actually draw minorities to the park. Keeping the park locks uncluttered and open, the flexibility of programmable space is actually next. Permanent structures and plantings reduce the flexibility. With too much clutter, there would have been no outdoor art museum antique car exhibit, for example. Protecting uncluttered as well as other historic design elements is imperative. Pause the master plan until the historic nomination is successful so all historic features are identified and can be protected by a new version of this plan.
Thank you so much. Next speaker is Diana Stewart.
Good afternoon. My name is Diana Stewart and I live in River Place in downtown Portland and I'm a member of the DNA. Thank you for this opportunity to comment on the proposed South Parks Block Master Plan. I also recommend that the master plan be paused until the historic nomination process is completed. I am not against a master plan review of this important historic space. However, a pause is prudent, since if the historic nomination is approved, certain provisions of this draft plan will need to be revisited by the commission through a historic lens, given that the current draft plan degrades a number of defining characteristics of this historic park. For example, the original boundaries of the park were established in the 1870s. The new plan ignores that history by routing the green loop inside the park's physical boundaries, something that could be contested if designated a historic landmark. The park blocks should be an open destination space for everyone, not a thoroughfare for bicyclists. I support the green loop, just not through the park. The park was designed for the outdoor enjoyment of everyone, a successful intent for more than a century, given that the park is still enjoyed, even during a pandemic, by seniors, families, students, and residents of the largest density of affordable housing units in the entire city. We live in a hard concrete surroundings and many residents lack vehicle access to green spaces. The park provides grass, open tree canopies, and outdoor finders in the center of the city of the seasonal changes that make our lives rich and healthy. Given my experiences with the River Place Esplanade at River Place, it is challenging to mix pedestrians and bicycles. Fast-moving bicycles are a danger to slow-moving pedestrians, little children, and seniors who are not agile in dodging them. For pedestrians, both cars and bicycles are moving hazards. The green loop should be situated in adjacent streets, not in this historic park. Finally, the current plan to situate planters on the borders to separate cyclists from pedestrians restricts accessibility for pedestrians. Using bollards or bike-unfriendly curbs would be preferable, allowing access and will be more sustainable in terms of maintenance. In closing, please pause the South Park Blocks Master Plan until the historic nomination process is complete, and during such a pause, evaluate the challenges noted regarding the park blocks and the green loop. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next speaker, Walter Weiler, please.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Walter Weiler, living at 1221 Southwest 10th Avenue, a member of the Downtown Neighborhood Association, the DNA. Thank you for your service and the opportunity to speak to you today. The proposed South Park Blocks Master Plan routes the bicycle green loop through the park blocks. I'm opposed to that plan, preferring the bicycle loop be placed on Broadway, separated from the pedestrian loop. Mixing a thoroughfare bicycle route with walking pedestrians is a recipe for unsafe, unhappy pedestrian experiences. Portland's waterfront promenade is an example. High-speed bicycles weave in and out of pedestrians, making for a continuously uncomfortable pedestrian experience. And enforcement of bicycle walking zones has been non-existent and non-effective. Also, South Park Block's pedestrian traffic is often east-west, moving to, from the streetcar through the Art Museum walkway, to, from the Cultural District in downtown. East-west pedestrians crossing a north-south bicycle thoroughfare is an unsafe plan. For pedestrians, both bicycles and cars are moving vehicle hazards. Rather than create another unpleasant waterfront promenade like pedestrian zone and an unsafe pedestrian crossing, I recommend the bicycle green loop be separated from the pedestrian green loop and placed on Broadway to link up with the southern portion of Broadway that already includes protected bike lanes. Our City 2035 plan already provides for just such a separation and that is in Green Loop Design Principles, Volume 5B, page 14, item number 3, quote, "The Green Loop concept includes physically separated paths to minimize conflicts between cyclists, pedestrians, and vehicles. These separated corridors will create safer, more intuitive pathways." Finally, I feel that I'd like to see bicycles coming to the park, not through the park. Hey, thanks for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Hey, Chair Minor, can we go back to number 9, Robert Wright?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, you went past me, but I'm here. My name is Robert Wright.
I apologize for that.
Oops, sorry. Everybody there? Okay. My name is Robert Wright, Chair of the Safety and Livability Committee of the Downtown Neighborhood Association. I'm a Portland native and live in Portland's West End. The master plan for the South Park blocks must be paused, as we all have said, until its designation as a National Historic Landmark is decided. Its distinctive alleys and axial views must be retained. Their beauty and character are indeed historic, but their retention is necessary for modern consideration, safety. As a public space, the South Park blocks will be shared with everybody, including those unfortunately experiencing homelessness, substance abuse, and deteriorating mental health. The draft master plan for blocks 7 through 11 in the Cultural District collapses the existing two central alleys into one central hardscape devoid of separating grass, trees, and plantings. Pedestrians will be channeled down this central walkway with its planned central and side seating. There will be unavoidable close encounters with groups of people loitering in the park. Unfortunately, due to sometimes apparent antisocial behavior, some groups should be avoided. All park patrons, especially the elderly and mothers with children, should be able to take alternative routes through the park to avoid confrontation. The current two alleys and two border sidewalks enable people to decide where to walk for their own safety. However, a considered option in the master plan is the removal of the sidewalks, further limiting pedestrian choices from 4 to 1. Thank you for your time and consideration on this important matter.
Thank you, I appreciate that. And I'm sorry for skipping you. The next speaker is William Crawford. No? Okay. Kevin Cornelius. Okay. Fred Leeson.
Kristen, excuse me. Oh. William Crawford is an attendee, and so he needs to be.
Oh, fantastic. Okay, so you just have to be. Oh, there you go.
So he should be here now.
Okay. William Crawford, can you hear us?
Can you hear me now?
Yes. Thank you.
Beg your pardon. Please. Yes. Hi. Hello. My name is Bill Crawford. I am a rare bird, as in I am not on the Downtown Neighborhood Association. I live in Southeast Portland, but in normal times, I would be working near the South Park blocks 5 days a week. I'm primarily a cyclist and a transit user, and I believe that we should stop accommodating cars that categorically destroy this idea of livability that we're constantly seeking, but sometimes just too afraid to make the necessary trade-offs. I'm an advocate for park space that works to serve all communities in our city and not just those fortunate enough to live near the park. We all use our parks to lift us all up, and I think this master plan does a good job in balancing those needs with an eye to the future. Now, I'd like to mention, and I'm not chiding the community engagement folks here, but I saw that the demographics of those surveyed has over half the respondents over the age of 60. I don't think that demographic represents the majority of parks users. I'm going to start my video. I think I might have a different perspective. I regularly attend the farmers markets, and I often visit the park blocks with my young children after attending the symphony events for kids at the Arlene Schnitzer. It's scary crossing the streets because of the auto traffic and not adequate crossings, but I see this plan addresses many of those points, but I would support it going even further. I'm sad to see that many of the elms must come down, but I have the full confidence in the Urban Forestry Department in implementing a successful tree succession strategy. The native plantings and proper spacing will continue a lovely but more diverse and resilient canopy than the one we enjoy today. And I'm excited to see that parking will be removed to help facilitate proper cycling and walking path spacing. I don't think that the sky is falling with all of the impacts that some of the neighborhood association people are predicting with the, you know, it's not going to be an unpleasant experience. The riverfront waterfront park, it's not an unpleasant experience. I, you know, recommend you try it sometimes. I applaud the expansion into the right-of-way and like to, you know, with the emphasis on humans over cars. And as I said before, greatly would support more expansion to the right-of-way to accommodate larger plazas and more human space. There is something missing from the plan. I would like to see the redesign of the monuments currently on display. You know, you can say what you will about the shortcomings of Abraham Lincoln, but we should not be celebrating our white supremacist past by honoring Roosevelt. He was an American adventurist directly responsible for the subjugation of millions and the deaths of thousands in the Philippines, the Pacific Rim, and the Caribbean. We have a duty as citizens and residents of our city to shed light on our racist past while we choose to celebrate American heroes who are worthy of our emulation. Roosevelt did not fall into that category. He's not an Oregonian. He had little impact upon our local history. I'm confused about why he's even there in one of our most beautiful parks. His statue was removed from the Museum of Natural History, an institution he helped create, so why don't we? It's time for him to go into storage at the nearby museum. Now, I realize that the monument authority is in the purview of RAC, but I would like this to be more of a piece of the conversation, especially as the local neighborhood association is seeking, as we've heard over and over again, for support for a historical district for the area. I'd like to mention that they have also sought the support from many other neighborhood groups without mentioning that this master plan is occurring. That said, thank you for hearing me. Thank you for all the hard work in making this park an asset that serves all Portlanders. Thank you.
Thank you very much, William. Let's see, one last call for Kevin Cornelius. Okay, we're gonna move on. Fred Leeson. No Fred today? Okay.
Fred is here.
He's in here.
Yeah? What was that exactly, Laura?
He's here.
He's here. I just don't.
Okay.
See him. He's muted.
I see you, Fred.
Okay, there we go. All right, super, thanks. I had the pleasure of playing a very small role in the National Register nomination. And I did that because the South Park blocks may well be the most sacred turf in our city. They deserve reverence for how they were donated, for how they were planted, for the cultural, religious, and educational institutions they've attracted, and for the uncluttered open space they provided for many, many public uses over the decades. Sadly, the Citizens Advisory Committee that worked on this so-called master plan had little knowledge of or interest in the park's history. The one member who did care was consistently shut down, at least in the two meetings that I attended. My unverified understanding is that this planning process was motivated in large part and funded by a single developer who built a large building near the park. We can certainly appreciate his donation, but we need to know more about his motivations. Remembering guidance from the great Portland historian Kim Bart McCall, we need to remember that we don't want to let private interests dictate the public interests on this historic ground. If there is to be a legitimate master plan, we need to start over and do it right and integrate the historic elements of the park identified in the National Register nomination. Thank you.
Thank you, Fred. Next speaker I show is Susan Bliss.
Okay, can you hear? I don't see my picture, but can you hear me?
Can hear you.
Okay, well, here I am. My name's Susan Bliss and I live on 10th Avenue, just right by the South Park blocks. These parks are unique. The only park in Portland that was designed and remains a deciduous downtown forest. In the 1800s, Portland cleared its ubiquitous conifers from the park space and limited replacements to deciduous species. The park is no monoculture though. There are some 19 species of deciduous broadleaf trees now growing there, including four different species of elms. The decision for deciduous trees turned out to be a gift to future generations because deciduous trees are more efficient at storing CO2 than our conifers. One mature elm in the park, for example, can store 7,400 pounds of carbon, while a mature cedar stores only a tenth as much. Taken together, the deciduous trees of the South Park blocks can store nearly 1 million pounds of carbon every year. Elm removal might be considered an equity issue. Unlike Portland neighborhoods abundantly endowed with trees and other plants, downtown's hardscape is made more livable by the trees that gracefully arch over this linear plot. Residents of Portland's densest concentration of affordable housing, its downtown, can thank these trees for the improved quality of the air they breathe. The draft under discussion, however, appears to remove up to 30% of this urban forest. It proposes clear-cutting half of one PSU block to accommodate that institution's overreach. This too might be considered an equity issue. A strategy for tree succession and maintenance is needed, but tree policies should not be buried in a master plan. They should be pulled from this draft so they can receive the public attention they need to weigh trade-offs. It is a better idea to work on a tree plan along with key future design features of the historic nomination. So let's pause the master plan to allow for separate completion of the historic nomination and a sensitive parallel strategy to ensure the health and survival of the South Park block trees. Thank you.
Thank you, Susan.
Thanks.
Next speaker, Kim Nurmi.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, thank you for taking my testimony. My name's Kim Nurmi. I was born and raised here in Portland. I have valued the park blocks all my life, and I would like to, and I live in near Ladd's Addition. I don't live downtown. And I would like to share a personal story with you about the park blocks. Recently, during times of COVID, in the early days, I started going down there because it was so peaceful, and I was able to maintain a proper distance. And I was just astonished at how beautiful it was. There are fewer people there at that time. And, you know, it just brought the whole park blocks alive, all the architecture around it. And as I was there one day, I was walking down the park blocks and I could have sworn I was 4 years old again. I used to visit my aunt in her corner apartment in the park blocks, and we used to go to the Rose Festival activities, and I used to skip down the street, and I saw a little girl skipping down the street. You know, I dearly love that park. I used to go with my folks to the Lincoln statue. We went to the Shemansky, you know, I know the Lincoln statue looks like it's looking right down the park blocks. I want to say to the young man, the only thing I really know about Teddy Roosevelt is he started the National Park Service. And then I particularly like the Shemansky Fountain, which was dedicated to a Polish immigrant known to, he hired a lot of recent immigrants. And anyway, I've been going down there and I've just fallen in love with it. And the classic design resonates with me the same as when I was a child. And I have to say this too, the first time I visited Central Park, it reminded me of the South Park blocks, and I'm sure they would not be making the changes that are suggested. I very much oppose bike lanes.
Hey, Corey.
Happy afternoon.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Is somebody unmuted?
I unmuted Dave.
And anyway, the addition of the bike lanes bothered me because they have definitely cluttered my neighborhood. That's one reason I go down to the park blocks. You know, I worry about the safety of a lot of the residents there. I notice a lot of older people sitting around, actually, the Lincoln statue. One day I saw a young man reach up to hold Lincoln's hand. Very impressive. I worry about taking parking out of there because now, you know, there's thousands of older people that are dependent on medical transport and that park.
Kim, I think I need you to wrap up here.
For listening to me. And I would ask you to pause going forward with the master plan until the nomination is complete. In my mind, this is a timeless park. And when you take out the roots of those elm trees, you're taking out my roots too. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Next speaker I have who signed up is Andrew van der Zanden.
Hi there. Thank you. My name is Andrew van der Zanden. I have worked for 20 years on the South Park blocks at the Oregon Historical Society. I have a degree in history. And one of the things that I think that we need to talk about that has not been mentioned yet is that this, and where we're talking, where I assume all of us are, is on native land. And that has not been acknowledged. All the history that has been talked about has been about talking about taking it back to when the settlers first came. They were preceded by other people. And one of the things that the CAC did was to get input from the Native American community and the indigenous peoples who have always called this home. I see a lot of what is going on here with the DNA, and kudos to them for, you know, their political mobilization, but I find it very offensive because they have weaponized history to prevent change from happening. They're using history as you can't change this because of history. They don't look at environmental science. They don't see the facts of the situation. They mislead. There are so many things I noticed in just what the presentations, I mean, from everything from it's going to become this bicycle highway, which it's not, and Broadway already is that commuter thoroughfare. This is for a leisurely stroll through the park. This is a park. This is making it better. This is not, you know, and yes, you're going to lose some elms, but it's called science. You have to follow science. You know, science is not going to stop for history. You have to make accommodations for that. I would encourage people also to look at the work the CAC has done. They have done a lot of work. We have been the whole committee has been incredibly accommodating of the DNA and Wendy in particular. Actually more accommodating than I would have preferred. The CAC, with the exception of Wendy, approved all of everyone except for Wendy and the DNA approved of the plan. That is what I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, Brooke Best. Hello.
Hello, can you hear me all right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'm Brooke Best and I live in Ladd's Addition, and I'm one of five citizen volunteers working with the DNA on the National Register nomination. As you know, it was submitted on July 1st, and the committee has also received a preliminary letter of eligibility from the SHPO. You may also know that the DNA received several letters of support from neighborhood associations, the Architectural Heritage Center, and Restore Oregon. And to set the record straight, these neighborhood associations, when we did the presentation, we started out with an introduction mentioning the master plan. So I apologize if people think there's some deception. There is no deception going on. So I'd like to highlight two main points here. Number one, the master plan should not precede the National Register nomination, which is intended to inform the redesign. The Central City 2035 plan says as much, citing as a priority the completion of a South Park Block's historic district nomination. It does not mention a master plan. Number two, the city has had several opportunities to list the South Park Blocks on the National Register. And for whatever reasons, these attempts have not succeeded. A National Register nomination was completed in 1985, but never submitted to the SHPO. And then in 2010, Portland-Milwaukee MAX agreement, parks agreed as a mitigation strategy to nominate a park to the National Register with SHPO's concurrence. The initial plan was for a South Park Blocks nomination. Instead, they chose to nominate the Halprin sequence, agreeing to list the park blocks by 2020. In 2016, parks had another chance to list the South Park blocks with the Broadway Tower project. And as you heard about the document on BDS's website, it stated that the developer had previously offered to fund the National Register listing. Again, parks turned it down, saying they'd do it by 2020. So what happened? In their outreach meetings, parks claims they recognize its significance. So why start with a master plan instead of a nomination to better understand the park's unique character-defining features first? Pause the master plan until the National Register nomination is done. The master plan is flawed. Essential design principles are ignored. It doesn't comply with National Park Service standards, and it will result in an adverse effect of its character-defining feature. It's time to get things right and do right for this precious green space in the heart of downtown, which acts as the lungs of the city. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you very much. The next testifier I show, Doug Klotz. Doug, you with us?
Oh, there I am. Okay. Got it. Yes. Thank you. All right. Chair Livingston and Chair Minor. I support the South Park, Park Blocks Master Plan. The park has had a number of uses over the years. The paving has changed. Actually, the trees have changed in some cases. And I also support the routing of the part of the green loop in the Central Park Blocks from Salmon to Market along the eastern edge of Southwest Park West, as is shown in the plan. This seems like an excellent compromise, which will separate bicycle and pedestrian and auto traffic. The two previous speakers mentioned bikes and pedestrians in conflict in River Place and along the waterfront. Well, to be different, this actually would have separated bikes from separated from pedestrians with buffering plantings on either side. So it does everything that those folks are asking for, separates the bicyclists. It doesn't intrude into the actual park property. It leaves another 15 feet. Actually, that's all in right of way. And it won't add any more paving in the park than the current edge sidewalks already have. I support the changes in the trees, the current plan of trees, the original plan is definitely, as the other fellow mentioned, Eurocentric, leaving, you know, taking away out all the evergreens and putting, making it look like Europe. Well, we accommodate our own the native area of, you know, the native vegetation of this area, the culture of the first people living here, as well as things that have happened over the years. So I support the plan as it says. Thank you.
Thank you, Doug. Next speaker I show is former chair of the Portland Landmarks Commission, John Zarnicki.
Well, thanks very much. I'd like to share my screen for a few moments. The testimony will be short. And what I'd like to do is to Let's see.
Laura, is that okay?
Great. Is that working?
It is.
Yes.
Okay. Let's see. I have, what I have here is just a few slides showing the existing context. You'll see that that is shown in a couple of different, I think all four seasons, we'll see, huh? I'm John Zarnicki. I'm an architect in practice at 1020 Southwest Taylor. I'm a member of the DNA board, but I'm not speaking on the DNA's behalf. I do agree that the National Register nomination process should be allowed to take its course before the master plan is complete. I think that very specifically, I think that some of the characteristics of the existing park really have to do with the understanding of a casual or informal or even romantic aspect of promenade and use of lawn and more less structured planting as defined by the trees. However, I think that the as you can see here, the parallel walkways with the statue and the green space between allow for a more individual experience as opposed to a combined walkway, which I'm concerned will take the energy away from the park as an occupiable space and put the energy on the park as something that one moves through, accentuated by individual dynamic events. I think that here is an example of a lawn in the park, and the bench is being used in a casual way, obviously. I'm concerned that this aspect of a casual lawn-like characteristic will be lost. Actually, I think that it poses an opportunity to understand what we have and maintain it. I suppose that this also goes in my feeling for this clock. I'm not sure the vintage of the clock, but it certainly is compatible with light fixtures, historic light fixtures that are in the park. But I will mention the character of the clock itself. Notice that it has a base, a middle, and a top. And notice that it's perceptible. The size of it is perceptible by a person standing next to it. The way it's broken down compositionally reinforces the human experience as opposed to concentrating on a machine-based experience.
Here's John, I do need you to wrap up here. Everyone is supposed to keep it to two.
There are some roses near the art museum. Here's another aspect of the LA. This is in autumn. Here it is also in autumn. Notice the leaves on the LA floor and the almost naked trees. Here it is in winter. Okay. The notion is really quite simple. We need to be able to understand what we have. And we need to be able to understand what we have at different times of year. And I guess the general comment I would make regarding this presentation, not my presentation, but this presentation in general, and most I've seen is we are not seeing enough context information. We see plans and we see diagrams and they're wonderful. You know, we have made plans and diagrams and 3D hand sketches and views all of our careers. We need to, in order to understand at the Design Commission and the Landmarks Commission, level of public endeavor and enterprise, descriptive aspects of the existing conditions to which we're being addressed. So thank you very much for your patience.
Thank you, John. Okay, and if you would stop, there you go. And I think our next speaker is Leslie Hutchinson. Leslie, you're on mute. There you go. Okay.
Okay. Good afternoon, commissioners. My name is Leslie Hutchinson, and I'm a member of the DNA LUT Committee Subcommittee for the South Park Box nomination to the National Register of Historic Places. I grew up in Portland. The Farrell Sycamore at Southwest 10th and Main stands in front of what was my great-grandparents, Sylvester Q. and Honor Farrell's home. The tree succession plan reduces the inventory by up to 30% of the trees. Just looking at the cultural district, the 25, the blocks 7 through 12, the 25 center row elms are on the hit list. This decimates the central double allee characteristic feature. By its own admission, the master plan removes plants over time, quote unquote, with no replacement approach, end quote. These trees are valuable and irreplaceable. They dictate everything about the continuous panoramas from Salmon to Jackson. They are the crowning glory of the legacy that must be preserved for everyone who uses that park each and every day. Now visualize, have you ever seen a healthy 140-year-old, 100-foot-high, majestic elm felled? The scene is staggering in its travesty and its total obliteration of Portland's cathedral of trees with a flora of grass. Any funds designated for demolishing trees would be put to much better use maintaining these trees. Now prioritize. Innumerable experts from all ranks, art museum directors, geologists, archivists, professors, curators, and young students relaxing in the park echo the importance of preserving this deciduous canopy in its axial alignment. The tree succession plan must be dealt with separately from the master plan. But first and foremost, historic preservation efforts, as filed in the end of June 30th, 2020, in the form of the National Register nomination must take precedence. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie. The next speaker I show, Donna Wilder.
Hi there, good afternoon. I am Donna Wilder and I work in the campus planning office at Portland State University. First of all, I would just like to thank Portland Parks Department for their partnership in this project. Advocacy for a campus and involving a broad range of PSU stakeholders. We've felt very much involved in the process, and we also feel that the plan takes into consideration a considerable amount of demographics that utilize the southernmost part of the South Park blocks. So thank you for that. Generally, PSU feels that we support the preferred plan. It aligns with our mission, our long-range planning, programmatic needs, and how we maintain the landscape in those blocks of the South Park blocks. We do feel that the plan can be further improved by removing parking and reducing vehicular traffic in the area. Moreover, PSU does seek to learn more about the historical nomination. The South Park blocks plays an integral role in the function and experience on our campus. For example, our students that need childcare facilities relies on the playground in block one as part of their care facility. And many of our buildings are designed to utilize the South Park blocks as their front doors and circulation methods. So we do feel that the historical designation may hinder the ability of PSU to adjust our campus environment in response to changing circumstances. So with that, we ask that the nomination exclude the South Park blocks in the University District south of Market, but we do further support the South Park blocks master plan. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let's see, next I show Keith Jones.
Hi,
Do we have Keith? Oh, yes, there you go.
I'm promoting him now.
Thank you.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yeah, thank you. Okay. Hi, I'm Keith Jones. I'm with the Friends of Green Loop. I'm here today to support the South Park Blocks Master Plan. As the Executive Director of the Friends of Green Loop, the experience of being on the Master Plan Community Advisory Committee has been rewarding and helpful to my work. Through the committee, I was able to listen to a wide array of stakeholders who interact with the South Park Blocks in various ways. The committee included representatives from the Portland Art Museum, Oregon Historic Society, Portland 5, Portland Farmers Market, and the DNA. Residents, students, and Portland citizens. We were able to interact with Portland Parks, Portland Bureau of Transportation, Mayor Reed, and MIG. The assembly was excellent. For Green Loop, it was important to understand the uses of the park blocks, such as the Portland Farmers Market and accommodating school buses for the Art Museum and the Portland Five. Relationships formed in the committee led to opportunities to learn more outside of the committee. I was able to volunteer at the Portland Farmers Market and understand how Green Loop would need to interact with this event, including vendor loadouts, market entrances, and chef concierge areas. Working with everyone, we came to a consensus on Green Loop alignment that reflected the needs and visions of everyone, an alignment on Park Avenue West. This recommendation is being vetted through the public and is looking like it is the consensus. As a result of this work, this is the alignment that I will be advocating for with PBOT and the public. Recently, I've been informed that the DNA does not approve of the master plan and has submitted a historic nomination for the South Park Blocks. It's unfortunate that the DNA has not taken advantage of the opportunity they had as a member of the Community Advisory Committee to listen to the voices in the room and work together through the process to develop a nomination that represented that combined vision. It's very troubling to me that the DNA has developed this nomination without the inclusion of any other committee members or Portland Parks. As far as I know, no one has seen the actual nomination, including Parks. I'm very disappointed in this unilateral action that discards all of the work and public input that we had that we put into this plan. This historic nomination did not need to precede the master plan. The process was an opportunity to discover the features and functions of the South Park Blocks that we all value and prioritize that could be included in a nomination. I support an inclusive and representative committee that includes key stakeholders from the public, private sector, and the city of Portland to properly nominate the park blocks in the future. I'd like to thank Barbara Hart, Tate White, and Portland Parks for their comprehensive process to develop this plan. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Keith. The next speaker I show, Lincoln Tucho.
Yes, hi, my name is Lincoln Tucho, and I'm a member of the board of the Architectural Heritage Center and a residential real estate agent here in Portland. Thank you for allowing me to testify today. I'd like to speak in favor of maintaining and cultivating the canopy of deciduous trees that exists on the South Park blocks, in particular the elm trees, which create a majestic and cathedral-like canopy over the park blocks. Anyone who's spent any time in the park blocks knows that unique, peaceful feeling that one gets while sitting, standing, or walking underneath this canopy. These deciduous trees provide dappled sunlight to pass down to the visitors of the park, as well as to the residents, workers, and visitors in the buildings which line the park blocks. And in the winter, when the trees shed their leaves and days are shorter and darker, residents and visitors benefit from more light which passes through the bare trees. Some drafts of the master plan have called for replacing deciduous trees with conifers, but I think this would be a mistake. Conifers create permanent and deep shade, which would create a gloomy atmosphere for the park blocks and the surrounding buildings. And Portland is already a seasonally sun-challenged city, and this change would only make it worse. Also, conifers can grow so tall as to be out of scale with the surrounding landscape and buildings and create a potential windfall hazard. I grew up in Detroit, Michigan, a city that was famous for its lovely elm-lined streets. And these elm trees gave the neighborhoods a stately quality and provided natural cooling during the hot summer months. Unfortunately, the Dutch elm disease hit Detroit hard in the 1960s and 70s, and thousands of trees were removed at this time. And these once majestic streets turned hot and dusty and barren in just a few short years. Of course, there were many factors which led to Detroit's decline, but the loss of these lovely trees certainly added to some of the blight. Some neighborhoods, however, took efforts to protect and maintain their elms, and fungicides that could be applied directly into the bark of the trees were used. These resistant strains were cultivated, and those neighborhoods enjoyed a higher quality of life, increased property values, and less neglect in the surrounding areas. So Louis Funder, the horticulturalist who did the original plantings, and Edwin Meech, a park superintendent in the 1900s, and the Olmsted brothers all contributed to the design of the South Park blocks, following very specific principles to create a space that was walkable, airy, light-filled, symmetric, and geometrically pleasing. Therefore, I ask that the city honor this vision and maintain the picturesque and beneficial canopy of the park blocks. I ask that the Urban Forestry Department continue to inoculate the elms as needed to prevent Dutch elm disease, and plant young trees as needed to fill in the gaps when older trees die or need replacing. And I ask that the city continue to enlist the help of the great local nonprofit Save Our Elms in this important work. And thank you so much for your time and attention.
Thank you. I have Brian Davis as the last signed up speaker. I will ask if anyone else is listening after this and still wants to testify. But Brian, please go ahead.
Thank you. So my name is Brian Davis. I've lived at Harrison Tower, just a hop and a skip from the South Park block, since 2006. And I'm here to speak in broad support of the master plan. I'm surprised this hasn't been emphasized, but when I first got here, there was actually no auto parking adjacent to the park. It was a much nicer alignment that emphasized the green space while reducing conflicts between people driving, walking, and cycling. And so I fully support the plan's inclusion of the green loop, which would restore and enhance the street configuration. Further, I appreciate the effort that went into the outreach and engagement during this process. Interested parties like myself heard about the process and had opportunities to engage through multiple channels at multiple points. As a member of the planning community myself, I commend the effort led by Portland Parks and Recreation here, and I think the resulting plan is a great vision that is supported pretty widely. By contrast, I had not heard until recently of my neighborhood association's efforts to win historic designation for this corridor. I certainly appreciate the energy to protect the beloved space. However, I don't support any shenanigans that threaten to derail the process, and the opposition to the green loop is particularly problematic. As a business owner, a member of the PSU community, and a longtime neighbor, I would posit that the key constituencies that DNA purports to represent overwhelmingly support the green loop concept and its inclusion along the park blocks. I appreciate in the utmost the volunteer efforts of the DNA board and their contributions to this community. However, in this case, I think their efforts are not broadly supported outside of an insular group, and certainly there hasn't been any effort to build support outside of it. Lastly, I think we must not ignore the two pink elephants in the room, which should inform any planning effort in the present environment. One, of course, is the COVID crisis, which has illustrated some pretty important lessons about the value of our street space. If anything, I think perhaps it's time to begin asking if cars belong on the park blocks at all, or if perhaps the space may be better used with extended space for walking and rolling, space for sidewalk cafes and other similar uses that are sort of becoming pristine now in our new normal. And finally, the Black Lives Matter movement has taught us that we must ask who our plans are serving, who they leave out, who is and who isn't at the table when decisions are made, and other hard questions. As the plan moves forward, I urge the team to embrace this challenge, centering the needs of Black, Indigenous, and other communities of color that have been robbed of their enjoyment of public spaces for too long. I thank you guys for your work and for your audience, and that's the extent of my comments. Thank you.
Great, thank you so much. Is there anyone else who is listening who would like to speak? If so, you can use the little feature to wave your hand, and we can make you so we can hear you. Okay. I really appreciate everyone's patience in letting everyone speak, and I think had a whole host of interesting issues. So commissioners, I hope you've been kind of taking notes and holding your questions until this time. I think before I open it up to questions, I do want to make one point. I think a couple of people might be confused about the role of new historic nominations. The state of Oregon has changed the rules such that there's a separate procedure for actually any new historic nominations to have to go through a review. They're not inherently covered by, you know, the same type of land use procedure that we look to for existing buildings or places on the review. I mean, like City Hall, places that have already been listed, of course, we still have a historic review procedure. But for new parks or, you know, spaces like this, we don't have a historic review baked in. So I just wanted everyone to know that right off the bat. And yeah, let's go ahead and open it up for commission comments and questions, and hopefully the team is all still here. I've definitely got some, but I'd like to open it up for some others right now. Commissioner McCarter, and you are on mute. There you go.
I keep hoping somebody will go first.
That's your job.
A quick question. I am gathering, or at least I'm getting a sense from the testimony today, that Park Avenue East and Park Avenue West are considered part of the designation or part of the nomination. The street right-of-ways are included with the park, because there was comments about that we're running the green loop right through the park, and I was kind of like, okay, I need a little more definition there. Somebody
maybe
could ask
Hillary me. Or Tim could address that, just the difference between a right-of-way and...
I think Art could too. He is back.
Oh, great. Hi, Art.
Until he unmutes himself, I could respond. Basically, what I have seen from the master plan proposal, the diagrams that I've seen there, it looks that a part of the green loop would be on the western sidewalks along Park Avenue, which would also be 9th Avenue beyond the park blocks. At one point, there was an option to run the green loop through a portion of the park blocks, if I'm not mistaken. Tate, could you shake your head or not? Okay. But that's no longer shown. It looks like it shifted out. So it would occupy a portion of the sidewalk on the west side, but also be partly in the right of way.
That's my impression, as I wasn't quite agreeing with the assessment that the green loop is being proposed to run right through the park. In my mind, it's running at the edge of the park. And I guess a response to the comment about bike safety and east-west pedestrian movements, isn't there the same east-west pedestrians crossing a green loop on Broadway every 200 feet? You know, wherever we put a north-south green loop, there's going to be east-west pedestrians in our small block city crossing it. And I think the implication is that somebody said it even better. They said it's not a bike freeway. It's a bike facility with the same sort of transportation rules about stopping, yielding, sharing the road space with other modes. So I found that kind of an interesting argument, that there was more east-west conflicts at this particular location than any other north-south street.
I think there are a lot of controlled intersections north of the park blocks, and
maybe less so down this way. That might be part of the concern.
Commissioner Santner.
This question is for Hillary again. Hillary, do either of the two commissions have any authority or say in terms of delaying the master planning process to register the park as a historic or give the park historic designation?
Well, the National Register nomination will come before the Historic Landmarks Commission before it goes to the State Advisory Committee on Historic Preservation. That'll be in September. So at that time, they'll actually get a chance to review the nomination and make comments on whether or not they support it or not. If it needs edits, if it needs more work before it should move forward, they will ultimately submit a letter with their comments to the State Advisory Committee. That would be the extent of their involvement, really. And with regard to the master plan, official comments could be made by either commission to City Council.
And even if the master plan is approved as is before the designation, and then let's assume the park is designated, and then during development, adjustment has to be made, correct, to the plan in order to be consistent with the historic designation? I'm just trying to find out how critical it is for the this POSH to be put in place and not approving the master plan, not going forward, because a master plan is a plan. If the Bureau doesn't have money and it can't do it in 5 or 10 years, probably when they have the money, there has to be another plan, revise the master plan. So I'm just trying to...
Well, so
understand.
Two things, maybe three things. As Kristen was noting at the beginning of questions, newly listed National Register resources are not subject to historic resource review. So any changes to the park blocks would not require a historic resource review. At most, it would require demolition review if they were proposing demolition to the point where it might met the state's definition of demolition until the city gets its own definition of demolition. Even then, I don't think that it would meet that threshold because it would require that the demolition basically destroys the historic significance in whole or in part of the resource, which would be the park blocks. It's possible that the nomination lists individual contributing resources, like perhaps some of these monuments or statues as mm-hmm. contributing resources. If those were demolished, that would potentially require a demolition review. Individual changes to what's happening in the park blocks would not go through historic resource review. They likely also would not go through design review because we have an exemption for parks related uses in the open space zone. So in theory, the only things that either commission would potentially review are non-standard improvements in the right of way. So, which we don't know what those would maybe be yet, but one additional thing about the relationship between the master plan and the nomination. They're two separate processes. They could choose to link them or they could choose to not. A lot of nominations change after, or a lot of resources change after they're listed on the National Register. And sometimes, an entity will go back and revise the nomination to reflect the current situation.
Hillary, I had a super quick question.
Yeah.
I mean, could you potentially end up delisting if there's too many impacts to the park? So that is a risk. So yeah. Basically all the effort going into listing it pretty much would go to naught and it would be delisted, or it'd be eligible for being delisted, or whatever that process is.
As far as I understand, that's not something that necessarily automatically happens. Somebody has to ask for
I get that. But the point is, it could be delisted.
In theory, yes.
I have one more addition. This is following Brian's comment on Green Loop. Isn't there in block 2, Green Loop crosses the park diagonally? So actually is going through the park in that case. Am I reading that wrong? Arthur?
I don't know where Art is.
Correct.
Okay.
Is that correct? Okay. I take it as I'm right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have a quick sort of clarifying question about, I guess, the procedure here. And this question is really for, I think it's for you, Tate. We got a few letters about the proposal before the briefing today. And one of them was from the Parks Commission. Now, forgive me, I don't know very much about the Parks Commission. And I guess my question is really, is this a body that, is similar to, kind of Design or Landmarks Commission? Are they appointed by the mayor? Do they have decision-making capability? Could you tell us just a little bit about that commission?
Yes, this is Tate White with Portland Parks and Recreation. So the Parks Board is what they're named as, and Commissioner Santner could probably answer this question better than me. But they advise us. The Parks Board has taken various roles since they were created a very long time ago, and we meet with them regularly, and they advise our director. We kind of update them on different processes that we're doing. It's not exactly the same as a commission, but they do play an important role for us, and my understanding is various people apply to be on it, and they go through an application process to be on it, and so we aim to provide a level of diversity there. But for example, Patty Tillett sits on our park board, Randy Gregg sits on our park board, and Randy Gregg represented the park board on our community advisory committee. So I hope that's helpful and answers your question a bit. I also just want to use this opportunity quickly. Park master plans are accepted. They're presented to City Council for acceptance by resolution. And so these park master plans are meant to guide Portland Parks and Recreation. They're guiding our bureau work. And we have to consider so many different factors. And historic preservation for an eligible park like the South Park Blocks is one of those factors. But we also have to consider operations and maintenance and just and the needs of our community. And so I will say the park master plan has talked to a lot of different groups, and the draft preferred design is reflective of a lot of that input that we received. And so it is a challenging balancing process, and I'll leave it at that. I hope that answered your question.
Yeah, it definitely does sound more like a board. Thank you.
I think that maybe Commissioner Smith has something to say as well, and I will gladly let you go first. No? Okay. Big thanks to everybody who turned out to provide public comment today. It is so valuable to hear all of the positions of so many people in our community, and everyone feels great affection for and interest in and ownership of our city's parks. That parks are important. They are even more important today than they were 18 weeks ago. That said, even the last time we had a briefing on this topic, and I was kind of scratching my head then as well about why are we talking about this. So it's not entirely clear to me. I appreciate the briefing. It is not entirely clear to me why the Historic Landmarks Commission and the Design Commission is providing a venue for this level of community discussion on this topic, since we are not likely going to be doing any more than, you know, possibly providing some testimony on behalf of the master plan at council. So it just, I don't get it. That aside, thanks for coming and giving us a briefing. And some questions were asked about, does the master plan adequately support the existing character? Are the impacts well mitigated? Is the green loop integrated? And then questions directly from the team, you know, would the commission support an adjustment to the tree code? You know, what about thoughts on the upright vase form of the trees and, you know, removal of the central spine? Is that okay? So that, you know, there were some questions that were asked and folks probably want a little bit of feedback on that stuff. My perspective is the park is a beautiful space. It needs to adapt. It needs to adapt to serve today's needs and today's population in our city. And so that may mean that we lose a central spine of trees. That may mean that we need to be attentive to the species of trees that are planted in the park so that they can be as healthy as possible over the long term. From my perspective, those types of moves are consistent with the 2035 plan. They are in support of people who live in and enjoy the parks in the central city. And it is absolutely rational that we would make some judicious changes to this very important public space. So speaking from my seat only on the Design Commission, I am in support of much of what has been discussed today. There is so much about trees, tree form, landscape design that I have no expertise in. But you know, other folks on the Design Commission do. And then with respect to, you know, the historic character of this space, you know, I would rely on, you know, folks on the Landmarks Commission to really weigh in on that, because again, it's not something that, you know, I have any real expertise in. Clearly there's a lot of passion around this topic. You know, and you know, that's it. I don't even have a question. I just wanted to say that, that, you know, I think that as master plans go, this is kind of moving in a good and healthy direction.
I was just gonna, this is Commissioner Foti, to respond to that. You know, that, I guess that's the whole point, is we can't weigh in as far as the Historic Landmark Commission. Number one, it doesn't sound like officially we're expected to in any sort of formal review body way. And secondly, without the National Register nomination, I'm not gonna on my own time do all the research and documentation that's gonna go into a National Register nomination. That said, a National Register nomination is not gonna tell anybody what to do and not to do. It's not even going, I mean, I don't know if anybody understands what a historic structures report is, which really lays out character defining features, character defining spaces. The National Register nomination may allude to some of those things, but it's not defining it. I mean, it's, again, it's purely a document that, again, opens it up to some federal funding, for example, or state funding. On the other hand, it's information on this park that wouldn't necessarily preclude doing anything to it via the master plan. It seems like it's going to lay the groundwork to make the right decisions. And I think that's what people are asking for at this point. And I'd be curious from sort of the presenters, you know, what we had mentioned this when we had reviewed this at our hearing, or when we did that review and we asked about the National Register nomination, why didn't you guys even bring it up or address it or talk about the fact that it's gonna, you know, that people are working on it simultaneously? I'm just curious.
Sorry, this is Tate. That's a question for us.
Yes.
Yes, so back in December, we did a briefing with you, and I'm thankful for your time. Not my intention to waste it. Apologies that as a project manager, I thought because this was a historically eligible park, that it would be useful to come to you for briefings to get advice during the planning process. For the briefing last December, Wendy Rom did attend. She is our DNA representative on our community advisory committee, and she provided testimony. And she mentioned that this was December, and the previous month of January, they just started working on the nomination. So she did mention that when we were here in the briefing before, and you did ask that we come back when we had a draft preferred design.
So can I address this a little bit? You know, downtown parks, you know, they play significant roles in the urban design of downtown. And although there are no design guidelines related to open spaces, so that design commission could review them and then approve or not approve them. But still, the relationship of parks to public realm and to building next to it, at least when I was in the parks department, and I think that's being continued, is that there are a lot of expertise on the design commission to regarding public realm, and parks are major public realm areas. So the preference of the Bureau was to, in addition to advisory committees and steering committees, to bring it to the design commission to seek their opinion, the relationship of the design of the parks to the streets and buildings. So I think I see in this case that Parks Department is doing the same thing. Is there are expertise on this commission and on Landmarks Commission, and they want to just hear you, and it's another body that they're getting advice. Now that we can make a decision. So from that perspective, I think that is a good move. And then having said that, I just want to give my reaction about this master plan. I think that I applaud the team, the Parks Bureau, and the team for really taking our comments in previous presentations and made tremendous improvements. And they made some big moves. However, some areas they haven't made large enough move. I specifically refer to one of the testifiers about the park cars and parking, and the fact that Green Loop necessitates removal of parking on Park Avenue, but the parking adjacent to Park on 9th Avenue still remains. That to me, it's bothersome. I was driving through the park today, and there were two blocks that there were cars parked on the park side, and then the rest there wasn't. And there was such a significant difference in terms of the openness and the feeling of this being a sacred place. So I wanna encourage the parks and this master plan to reconsider retaining the parking on 9th Avenue. The other thing that I think I don't really see here is, in light of the city's stance in terms of diversity, equity, social justice, I really don't see much conversations and much representation on this master plan about that issue. Also, there is a lot of conversation in the city about removal of those statues on the park blocks, and how would that impact this master plan? So there are some of these things that need to be really looked into before it gets to city council.
Thank you so much. I have a couple of comments, and then maybe we can just, you know, take maybe a couple more after this and wrap it up, just because I know that the Design Commission does have to hear one more briefing after this. I have one comment or question about the sort of linearity of it and the attention on one end, and correspondingly, I would expect a little bit more of an ending, I think, at the other end, at the south end. And, you know, I'm certainly aware of the history that, you know, when 405 got put in, you know, we lost, I don't know how many, two or three park blocks there. And so, you know, what is currently the end, you know, of the park blocks extension was never the historic end of it, whatever that was, you know, but I still think there are so many people that walk the entire length and, you know, just kind of some degree of celebration there. You know, I don't think it necessarily comes into conflict with the playground use, but I do think having some sort of visual, you know, ending element that recalls, you know, perhaps the very beginning of it, or, you know, vice versa. I don't know what's end and what's beginning, but, you know, a marker is important. I also, I do feel that I'm somewhat concerned with the idea of including evergreens, at least the coniferous type of evergreens in the plan. I do think because the park is so narrow that the diversity of tree species should be more in the, you know, I'm no forester, I'm not going to use the right terms, but both the trees that have enough of a trunk, and then, you know, the arching branches above that you can walk under it, rather than, you know, the sort of triangular Christmas tree type coniferous trees. So that's my only comment on, you know, many of the numerous comments about deciduous trees. Let's see, I do myself strongly support the idea of having the green loop on one side of the street in the sort of street section rather than within the park itself. And I do make a distinction there. I think it's, I think that is something that everybody can sort of understand as a, you know, more of a transportation piece. And I also would strongly support removing parking and removing vehicles from the other side of the park. I welcome some other comments. Commissioner Robinson.
I have a few comments. When I was hearing a lot of testimony about pausing to wait for the historic designation, I was, you know, I'm unfamiliar with the process of historic designation of open spaces. And so I was really wondering, well, what does that mean? Does that mean that once it's designated a national historic open space, then you cannot change the type of trees, the species of trees that are in there, or you cannot change the pattern of the hardscape to something that's more contemporary? It didn't seem to me that historic designation would go to that level and would actually affect what the design was. And so, you know, but I was unfamiliar, but I'm kind of understanding now from other comments from commissioners that really isn't in the purview of the National Historic Register to tell us that. And so really it is about us understanding what the character of the park blocks is. And I too grew up in the park blocks. I lived in a PSU Parkway building and I played there every day. I played in Four Court Fountain and I played in the fountain with the mermaid lady. I know she has a name, but she was just the mermaid, and, you know, me and my brother and sister would hang out there all the time. So I have real reverence for the park blocks. It's absolutely beautiful. The canopy is magical and I love walking through it. But I really do support ecological diversity. I think that the park has to
evolve and be appropriate for the time that we live in, which means that we do sacrifice having, you know, this same species everywhere for adding in some diversity. And I, you know, you walk through Forest Park, you walk through a million other places in Oregon, and they're absolutely beautiful. So I have no doubt that Carol will be able to, you know, select species of trees that will really enhance the park walks. So I don't question that at all. I certainly, you know, wouldn't support removing trees that are healthy. You know, if you can phase the plan, which obviously would have to happen because you can't change out a whole park really quickly, you would be phasing the plan, which means that you understand that you're not going to build a hardscape in a location where there are mature, healthy elm trees until they need to be removed. And once they're not healthy, that they're at the end of their life, they can be taken out and then that hardscape can be placed in as designed in the master plan. And I really do support sort of removing the center plantings that divide up the walkways, because as a person who uses it all the time, I want to be in the park box in the center and I want to walk that entire length to my destination. I don't want to zigzag around and then end up on one of the side streets. So I do feel like that is a positive element of the master plan. I do support it. I think it's great. And I think that, you know, it's not just diversity of species, it's diversity of different kinds of plantings. So there's no doubt that we would still have rose gardens and we would have lawns, but maybe the ratio is a little bit different and the locations are different. And as long as you have those different kinds of experiences in the park, that's what's going to make it a great place for lots of different kinds of people who are going to use it in different ways. Me just walking by myself, families with kids might want to sit on the grass. Students at PSU absolutely want to sit on the grass. I'd rather sit on a bench personally, but there's, you know, we all use it in a different way, and I think that adding some diversity to it is absolutely positive. So I do support that.
Commissioner Roman, are you unmuted to speak?
I am. I had a quick question. Some of the common testimony that we heard from the critics, aside from the historic aspects of it, related to the linear aspect of the promenade and how one end of the park connects to the other. And I think Commissioner Miner spoke to that a little bit, and the amount of hardscape. And so I'm just wondering if the design team wants to respond. You know, at the south end, there's more diagonals, so there's less of that sort of processionary feeling. Did anyone say anything about the history that maybe enlightened your outlook on how the design might change? I'm not as interested in the diversity of species, but more in just that sense of avenue or sort of, passage.
So I can speak a little bit to that. There is, we haven't done a strict calculation, but there's about the same percentage of hardscape as there is in the plan as there is today currently, because there are some sidewalks, at least in the cultural district, on the edges. And so some of that pathway is through the center. We have the university district was redesigned in the early 1970s, and that's when those diagonal paths were put in that you see now. And actually, over time, one of the things I mentioned during the presentation is that the form of the path throughout the park have changed many times. There was a time when all of the blocks had a crisscross arrangement of pathways. Now what we have now is the linear arrangement through the cultural district, but that wasn't always the case. And at one point there was actually a combination. There was kind of the cross and the diagonal. So the pathways have always been there. There's always been a processional quality about the movement through the park, and there's always been a way to do that. But the actual form and location has changed over the hundred and several years that it's been in existence.
Okay.
Can I also make a comment about the process a little bit, just about the national register and into the design process?
Sure, thanks.
So I've been working with cultural landscapes. I specialize in them for about 20 years. And I would say that probably less than half the time do we have a National Register nomination that is written and approved by the SHPO prior to doing some design work. It just, you know, the process, ideally in an ideal world, you would have a nomination prior to beginning kind of a plan. And as someone mentioned in terms of the historic structures report, there's a companion process called the cultural landscape report. The same thing is true. You go through the process of identifying what those character defining features are, and then you, based on that knowledge, you can make plans. But a nomination in and of itself doesn't give you the process with which to make the decisions that a master plan or historic structures report or a cultural landscape report does. And so that's where actually they, you often see those two things working in concert together to develop the kind of community supported or public land supported process. So I just wanted to say that, you know, in an ideal world, you have one before the other, but it's very common not to have two finished. And we often have to do some guesswork in terms of what those character defining features are. It's quite common. And even if a nomination is done, sometimes the landscape isn't addressed. And so we actually need to extrapolate what we think will be have significance and have integrity for those pieces. So this, while this may seem an unusual process, it's actually quite common.
Okay.
Kristen, I have one more comment to make. And that is the cultural district part of the park blocks. One of the delightful aspect of it is the symmetry of it, which sort of gives this sense of history. And I really like the idea of having the row of planting separating the green loop from the park. And I'm wondering why that is not replicated on the other side. Although some people like to have the freedom of walking from sidewalk through the grass, it's not such a great idea for the grass. It's the, especially under such heavy canopy. And does it make sense to do the same thing on the Ninth Avenue side, to have the rows of low planting to create that symmetry? And then the other thing I wanted to suggest is that the central areas, these plazas, it seems like all four or five blocks have the same size of paved areas, which right now there's a difference between the two northern blocks of the cultural district than the two southern. And that gives you some episodic interest in it. So if anything, I feel like there's a lot of similarity in terms of furnishing and size of the plazas and all of that. So making some distinction between those four blocks, to me, it makes sense. Thank you.
And commissioners, I think I'm gonna call time on this briefing. We definitely, if you have more comments, the Landmarks Commission in particular, we could talk about writing a letter if we want to. You know, let's address that at our next hearing. But just in case, I don't want to run too long here. The Design Commission does have another briefing. And Commissioner Livingston, I'm going to leave it to you to decide how long of a break you'd like between starting your next briefing. But thank you so much for this really informative briefing, and I want to thank all the people that came to testify as well. It really, this is, as Julie said, it's such an important part of the city, so I appreciate it.
And me too. And Tate, Lori, Carol, I remember asking you to come back the last time you were in the hearings room with us, so don't think that I don't. I absolutely remember that, and thank you very much for all of the good information. It is informative, and there is little that is more important than our parks and public spaces today. Very good to see everybody on Landmarks. I think that design commissioners would likely appreciate a 10-minute break before we move to the next agenda item. Is that true?
Yes, please.
Folks are nodding their heads. Yeah, right on. Okay, we are going to take a standard 10-minute break and then reconvene for our third and final briefing of the day.
And Tim and Ben will be there to support you. I'm leaving.
Gotcha. Thanks, Hillary.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Thank you very much.